Go Strategic is pleased to present the School of Kingdom Citizenship. This teaching is entitled Economics, Part 1 by Dennis Peacock.
Well, God bless you. Dennis Peacock here, and we're going to spend a couple hours dealing with political economics. And I'm excited about this opportunity to share with you. My passion is I'm going to be trying to give to you 33 things I want you to know about economics, 33 things about economics. And what I'm trying to do is give you an introduction to the big picture, dealing with micro macroeconomics, major activities, and things that really matter. So I'm going to go ahead and jump. We're going to be moving fairly fast on certain parts and slower on the ones that I think are much more critical than we understand. Let me begin in part one on a definition and scale of economics. A working definition of economics is, economics is about human labor, the management of resources, the creation and process of exchanging goods and services, and the social systems connected with all that. We're going to talk about motives and ethics. And the first motive and ethic, two basic laws of economics. One is the Matthew 22, 36 to 40. What's the greatest commandment? Greatest commandment, Jesus said, love God with all your heart, all your energy, all your life. Second one, like unto it, love your neighbor as yourself. What does that mean to us in terms of economics? It means that we're trying by loving God, who is justice, loves empowering people. God's statement about his commitment to empower people is the cross. That's what God had to say, echoing across the universe, is watch me and let me show you how much I care about pulling people with me and living life as I live life. So love God, love your neighbor. We're going to deal with that a fair amount in this. And secondly, the reality that we were not saved to go to heaven. We were saved to inherit Christ's life in heaven and on the recreated earth. So economics is about holding the ethics, standards, and principles of God, loving God and loving our neighbor, and building with community in mind. And secondly, the reality that managing people and managing the material universe is one of the major ways that God grows you and I up. It takes responsibility and it takes the management of resources to begin to fully mature. And that's what God is all about, is the maturation of his children and co-managing the created order with Christ and with God's people. We're going to be presenting this material in ways that deal both with the individual and what deals with the community and the masses of people and nations. We're going to be talking about belief systems and what do they produce. How many of you know you got a lot of belief systems that don't produce what they say they produce? And we will be talking about that. Thirdly, we want to talk about simplicities. And we want to talk about complexities, and I hope you will just trust me when we get into the stuff that is complex to not try and go deeper than would be helpful. Some of you may be economists, some of you may have some background in this, but it can get really thick, and I want to measure how deep we go because I'm trying to give a survey of microeconomics, which is managing money on the small level, and macroeconomics, which is about managing the resources of the earth. Now, let me give you a working historic statement about the word economics. It's the English literation of the Greek word oikos. Oikos is the Greek word for economics, and what it literally means is household management. The micro side of economics, household management. The macro side, the managing of trillions of dollars and the resources of the earth. So why is this subject so critical to our common welfare, especially as Christians? I'm going to give you five important points of the 33, five right here on this issue of why economics is so critical to us as believers. And I've already started, but let me go back and pick up Matthew 11, 28 to 30, where Jesus said, if you've had enough of the world and you're finally ready to surrender, come and labor with me. Labor with me. Enter my yoke. Huge idea, simple words, huge idea. It means this. If you want to be close to God, engage in work with him. He's inviting us to join in his yoke. So we want to work with him, be at his speed, see what he sees, hear what he hears, follow him. Let the Holy Spirit disciple us as we give ourselves to the work that God is doing on the earth. Question, what work is God doing? God is in the business of maturing people. He does it 24/7, does it for a living. God is in the business of empowering people, training people, sharing his life with us so that we can begin to live life like he is living life. And my friend, that's a whole lot better than putting on a white sheet, floating around like ghosts, and sharing our testimonies forever. I want to hear your testimony, but mercy, not forever, because I'm working with my Father. He is always at work, as Jesus said, and we must be at work because work is an act of gift and holiness. We'll talk about that in a minute. Labor is the activity that largely defines our ultimate values and our character formation. Question being, what am I giving my time to, and why am I giving my time to that? That's a big question. Why are you giving the majority of your time to whatever you're doing? Do you know? You should know, because that has to do with managing and stewarding the biggest gift you have, which is time and life. In the context of our studies, we are going to be dealing with Psalm 2. I'm not going to quote all of Psalm 2. I want you to look at it. Get your Bible. Stop. You may want to stop and go get your Bible. The game is taking place in a rebellion against God and a rebellion against his choice to make Christ and the ecclesia, the church, we're going to talk about that, to make Christ and his church the manager of the created order in general and the earth in particular. Now, you may say, you know, when we die and go into eternity, I can get it. No. That isn't kingdom thinking. Kingdom thinking is in the reality, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth now as it is in heaven. We are in the process now of maturation. We're in the process now of assimilating the nature of God, which is about economics and other things. It's about the management of people and the management of resources. And that's what economics is all about. The world system is in rebellion. God has declared Christ is his manager. The world system says, we'll see about that. And we are engaged right now with a demonically platformed social systems that are trying to contain and shrink the space that Christians can function in, their influence in culture, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the battle is all over resources. Money, honey, if you want to get along with me, as the old rock and roll song said, managing time, managing money, managing employment, managing ethics and morality, managing labor laws, managing currency, all that stuff is one thing. It's the management of resources. And it's in a war between the world system and the kingdom of God, Christ's children, trying to manage resources in ways that, number one, honor God, and number two, demonstrate loving our neighbors. So here we are again. We're talking about two things, honoring God and managing resources in ways that demonstrate the love of our neighbors. So how do we engage the world system when we are competing with the world system for power? Well, we do it through the political process, largely through influencing culture, which is about discipling nations, and political voting, which votes people in who represent God in terms of their values and their understanding of economic principles. We're trying to get the right people in the management jobs so that we are in harmony as much as is possible in a fallen world. We always say, our work is to get the nations to align themselves with the values and the policies of God as closely as we can do that in a pluralistic, democratic context. We're not trying to take over. We're trying to bring God's kingdom and influence to bear so that the management of people and the management of resources is being done with a respect and honor of God and a love for maximizing the power of people. That's the game we're in. So, discipling nations is about helping them align. This is one of the 33 things I want you to get. Helping them to align their cultural economic systems as closely as is possible with scriptural values and principles, acting in the context of democratic pluralism. Ultimately, economics is about values, principles, skill sets, spiritual alignment with God's purposes, etc., etc. It means that economics is a centering point. That's how important it is. Because everywhere you look, you're in a building right now that was totally put together using the economic systems that are in your culture and operable. Everywhere we look, we see the material world, money, all kinds of laws, many economic principles involved. All of that is fully the work of economics. And we are submerged with economics, with oikos, with the management of resources in a godly manner. So, a brief history, again, I'm going through my notes with you, a brief history of economic man and society. It's taken many thousands of years for mankind to get where we now are. Just think about this. It began with Adam and Eve and God telling them to take care of a little bitty patch called their garden. That's where mankind's social reality began, in a little bitty garden. And now it's the management of billions of people. We've gone from managing a little garden to the management of billions of people in 200 nations. Pretty big functional change. That's called scaling up something from a level to another level. We're going to talk about scaling and growth economic concepts. There are five economic stages. So we just hit the idea that we began with a married couple, which the family unit is the building core of civilization. A married couple tending a small garden to where now billions of people are being called to tend their gardens, the management of material things, the management of children, the management of education, the management of everything in your garden that you influence is now your task and my task because God handed that down to us and through Adam and Eve. Every human being you know is in the process of managing their garden, even if they have no clue that's what they're supposed to be doing. We as Kingdom Christians, we should be very clear that we are economically managing our time, our energy, our life, our vocation, et cetera, et cetera. That's all about economic management because it's all about managing time, managing resources, and influencing people. Welcome to economics being everywhere. So how did we get here? Well, we started as hunter-gatherers, so-called primitive or third-world economies, where people were basically constantly on the move, living off nature, square one. Square two is food, shelter, cultivation. At one point, man began to cultivate the soil, began to plant, plan, strategize in sync with the seasons, et cetera, et cetera. Number three, they discovered what we call in economics a division of labor, where they discovered that with the different gifts that we had, we can build an economy of diversity using the diversity of gifts. And we learned if I plant 1,000 orange trees, I can sell enough of that to make enough money to buy all the other things with a profit away from the others that are managing their systems and their skill sets. The division of labor and the separation of powers are two of the foundations of modern life, both politically and economically. When you discover the division of labor, you begin to, the unit prices, the unit input gets more and more efficient until you can reach a point where that's no longer possible. It's called the law of diminishing returns. But you're gaining, because you're doing a simple, small progress over and over and over and over, which means economically, you're increasing the value, but you're reducing the amount of time and energy to get it, which is properly handled where you make profit. And the profit then gives you the ability to provide for essentials of life and what we call, we're going to talk a lot about this, discretionary time. Time that is not being spent just to stay alive on the bare essentials. That is what the law of economies of scale produced. Out of that came a trading economy. Out of a trading economy came a scientific technology. And lastly, we currently reach the status because of thermonuclear war that we've agreed in what's called mutual assured destruction, MAD, that we may engage in smaller wars, but humanity has largely agreed we're not going to go to thermonuclear war, which would wipe us all out. Now, why do I put that in the journey from hunter-gatherers to mutual assured destruction? It shows that we've gone from one possibility to another ultimate possibility, which means we've now fully defined the playground, so to speak, in the context in which we are now all living in time. Now, these systems, which now manage the political economic world, these systems have ideological energy. They have ideological challenges, and they have developed something that we didn't see until the last several hundred years, which is corporations. Corporations, which I'm sure you understand, are legally a person. They have the rights of persons. They can be sued like persons. But the corporations now are, many of them are becoming mammoth. They're becoming, especially in the realm of the web world, the technological world, and the size of these corporations are as big as many nation states in terms of their ultimate gross domestic product. They're nations unto themselves. So we've gone from cultural food gatherers all the way to guaranteed, as much as you can guarantee, mutual assured reality that we don't want to commit human suicide. So we've closed that off, at least up to this point. And now we've created new entities which are now beginning to challenge us, similar to the way nations challenge us because of the power of these corporations that employ hundreds of thousands of people in the same company in multiple nations. The point that I'm trying to make here is we've made a pretty spectacular upscaling. Humanity is incredibly productive, and he is indeed an economic animal. And we are still morphing. We're still in changing as to where all that's going to go. We're going to come back to those monopolies and what we need to do to safeguard ourselves around that stuff. So what are some of the challenges that we face in economics right now? One of the big ones is what's free market capitalism. That is, man is individually free. He purchases what he wants. He can start his own business, or, you know, males and females, families are free to engage in whatever vision they have called a free market society against what is called a command-based economy, which is what socialism is. Socialism is a system where the leaders of the government, civil government, decide for the people largely what the government wants them to spend their life doing in terms of economic production. Now, that is, on one level, it's absurd that there should be competition around that, because creativity only comes with choice. I had a small business. My wife and I, Jan and I, had a small business for 5 years. In the beginning, we slept on the floor of that company in order to make it work. It took 18 hours a day. We didn't drive home. We slept there. You would never do that for a command-based company. You wouldn't be able to pay large numbers of people to do that. That's slavery, okay? Let me ask you this question. Who do you think is more productive? Who's more creative? Somebody who's fulfilling a vision that was in their heart and in their head. They saw something. They wanted to take their talents and they wanted to take a shot at building something that was their choice. Who is going to be the most productive, the most creative? That person or somebody who is notified when they get out of school where they should be working and what they should be doing. Golly gee, that's a hard question, isn't it? I mean, it's asinine on one level, but we're still in the argument with some people, especially because we've kept no history, very little history in the culture of the one failure after another, repeated failures of socialism, but nevertheless, because it's spiritually driven, not ideologically driven. Capitalism and socialism have spiritual foundations to them, which is why the argument between the two is not just about results, because it's deeper rooted than that. And it goes all the way back to the nature of man who has appropriated the nature of God, who wanted to be free, who wanted to give people different gifts and give them the opportunity to really develop managerial skills, which is building something that is yours. So moving on, I talk here next about accusations against capitalism. I want to put a little bit of that into this. I've got five criticisms of capitalism. Don't worry, we're going to get more into this. By the way, I don't want to use the word capitalism, because capitalism does have some down characteristics that need to get fixed. So when I talk about free market economies, what I'm really talking about is choice-based economics. That's a phrase that I, to some degree, own and have coined. Choice-based economics versus command-based economics. Nevertheless, and I was a Marxist for a season, which goes with any young person who really cares about justice, is going to go left as they intellectually awake, hopefully at least for a season. There's an old saying, you know, if you're not a Marxist before 30, you've got no heart. If you're still a Marxist by 30, you got no head. And there's truth there. What are some of the accusations? I want to look at five. First one is alienated labor, that capitalism alienates labor. What does that mean? It means that I'm working at something I did not choose to do. And that's what socialism does, is separates us from the ability to have labor we wanted to do and commands us to do some other kind of labor. And capitalism is much freer on that ground alone than command-based economies. What about Darwinian values? That capitalism is survival of the fittest. That's one of the critiques against it. Not if those who are engaged in it love their neighbors. Love their neighbors. By the way, if you want to go left and right, the left is the one that is known as the command-based economy followers, which is going to produce a lot of alienated labor, where we are separated from our hearts and what the vision that's in us because we're under command. Darwinian values, survival of the fittest. Yes, a capitalism, a free market economy that is not properly balanced with principle and community and care about people is going to be out of balance. That is what makes Christianity, of all the ideologies, the only religion that has labor theories and community theories based on loving your neighbor and at the same time having freedom of economic energy and activity. How about number three, competition versus cooperation? There's truth in that, but competition presses people to go to levels they would never go without pressure. Again, the issue is if you're not in an economy that has got love built in, care for those less able, empowering those that can be empowered, all of those things are Christian values which are the antidote to all the major criticisms of capitalism and an indictment against socialism, which neither has the productivity because capitalism is the fire of productivity, but command economy is like putting heavy water and spraying any fires out, because people are doing things because they're compelled, not because they're envisioned. I don't know how to say that any plainer. What is success is really the supreme personal microeconomic question. What is success? Everybody is going to work a pretty heavy load. Why are you working? You're working to survive, but you get beyond survival in most economies. Certainly, advanced economies are pushed into the place of discretionary time. Well, again, we're going to talk about that. That's a big issue. But after I've created enough value and received enough money, we're going to talk very directly, enough reward for managing my life on a base level, then the real question goes, how much more work am I willing to engage in order to get discretionary time and upscale living? The moment I'm at that point, I'm now in an ethical choice. Do I want money because I want more discretionary time? How much discretionary time am I willing to sacrifice now for discretionary time later? How much discretionary income, how much consumption? Now we're into a whole economic world of culture. How much consumption of material goods beyond survival need am I going to spend? Oikos, how much am I going to manage microeconomics, manage my life, manage my family, manage my personal situation? What values are going to make me give up time serving people, serving God, serving family? What values are going to compete with that? And why am I going to follow those values? In other words, we're at a huge ethical junction. As soon as we get beyond survival and discretionary time, we now need to wrestle with the value of my life, the value of my family, the value of other people, the value of my visions and dreams. What am I willing to invest in? How much and why? That is a major, major question. Say hi with a smile. Well, from a Christian point of view, success is the way that we want to measure. Did I succeed in following the mission? Did I discover and did I work out and work through and develop the gifts that God gave me as a human being, which was his dropping of breadcrumbs, taking us along a path that he wanted us to go down, which is the skill sets, the gifts, is taking me on a walk, on a journey, so that God can show me what did he really create me to do? What are the things that he wants me, by virtue of my gifts, to invest in? That is an economic question that is not real until you've reached a survival base. And by the way, capitalism, and I'm not whoopee on capitalism, I hope you're getting that out of me. That's why I want to talk about choice-based economy and community-based values, okay? But I want to be able to discover those things, and a successful life is a life that made the right choices about what to do with the different things that God gave to us. Now, socialism is not in any place competitive historically, economically. Capitalism has brought more millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of people into the middle class. And what is the middle class? The middle class, economically, sociologically, is the group of people who have now reached minimum survival at a certain point where they have discretionary income and discretionary time. That is why the middle class politically is always so important in elections and is argued about. The prize is the middle class, because economically, if you don't have a middle class, you don't have two things. You don't have discretionary time and discretionary spending, because their wages are above sheer survival. And secondly, you don't have the freedom of time, discretionary time. Discretionary lifestyle and discretionary time is only possible when you have the majority of your population over the hump of meeting material necessities. I hope I'm communicating clearly. It's a huge idea, and it drives all political elections, and it is the backdrop of people running for office based on their economic commitments and what they want to do to strengthen the middle class. Now, middle class is in real danger right now, not just because of decisions that have been made years ago, but because we are now facing an immense debt crisis, which we're going to get to soon. So right now, again, the context in which all economics is operating right now is the battle over the legitimacy of influencing nations between Christianity and the secular world. And secondly, the battle is between China, which has got a historical commitment to socialism, versus capitalism, which is the so-called first world nations, all of which are capitalistic, which means the economy is managed and it has borders, but it's largely driven by choice. Critical, critical issues. So your political decisions that you're going to be making, I will be praying for you, is again going to be the choice between command-based economies and choice-based economies. So let me get now into the next huge issue that I've brought up and put in front of you already. And that is the reality that choice-based economics, capitalism, whatever amounts of rules that capitalistic market is functioning under, has got a tremendous temptation. And that is leveraging a current lifestyle off future economic guarantees. And we're going to come back to that so you'll get it. This is a huge one, a big one. What has happened based on the emergence of the arguments, some of the economic arguments between the conservative economic group, largely known as the Austrian economists, von Mises and Hayek are the two most noted conservative economists, as contrasted with the economist, the primary one, John Maynard Keynes. I've done a lot of debates around all this. John Maynard Keynes, an English economist, issued a major book in the 30s on the general theory of interest, et cetera, capital. And basically what he showed is that you can leverage income into the present time if you manage debt, because and you have a long enough term of paying off the debt. Let's say I borrowed money from you at the 10% interest, and I'm going to pay it back within 10 years. But there's a problem with that, and that is that the rate of inflation, which the capitalist system had targeted 2% for decades, that if we would just stay at 2% inflation, we can leverage future revenue and take out loans and pay it back. But if I'm paying you back in 20 years and there's 2% inflation every year, how much am I paying you back? Okay. You're going to have lost at least minimally 20% of what I'm paying you, inflated dollars. That is, dollars that no longer mean what they meant in amount when we set up the debt. And we have done that now. We have spent so much that we've created trillions of dollars of IOUs, which are going to be paid off in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, having lost up to nearly 50% of the value of that money. So what you're doing is you're spending money at one rate of what it purposes, but paying it back when it makes only a fraction of what it made and add value when you took out the loan. I hope I've been clear for you. That debt now, and this is called the fiscal gap, that gap now for the United States is not the figure that you publicly hear. That is not the real truth. The real truth, and I work with the global experts and the global expert on estimating how much we've leveraged current spending and ready to pay it back in deflated value. The actual amount of our indebtedness, when you put all our retirement, all our medical guarantees, all the social assignments that we've taken on that the civil government or the corporations are going to repay in the future, is now nearly $190 trillion. Now, I've only heard Fox News once, about 2 years ago, use the phrase the fiscal gap. Why? This is not conspiratorial. Look it up. Validate, as the Bible said, search this out, see if it's true. That amount is so catastrophic. It's one of the reasons that we've tried to keep the interest rates down, because the way you keep interest rates down allows for a limited amount of inflation, but it keeps you from having severe inflation, and it minimizes the interest that you're paying for borrowing money. Interest rates have been the primary tool, if you keep them low, to get relatively free money. In other words, money that is worth a lot more now than it will be when you pay it back. And you have to keep it low, because if the interest rate goes up higher, most loans are flexible. So if you took out a loan at 2%, but it's going up and it's got flexibility, you're going to end up paying 4%, and you can't afford the 4%, and it's going to collapse the value of your loans, which you've taken out. You've leveraged for future benefits. You're paying, not only are you paying less value back when you pay back the full amount in the however the terms were in the loans, but you're not only paying back with devalued money, you force the situation into where we are now, where we were 1.5% or 1.75%. Now we're 3% or 4%. And all the government loans and private loans that have flexible interest rates are now going to the point where they cannot pay back the amount of money that they've borrowed, which means the medical insurance, the social security insurance, the retirement insurances of all the cities, the regions, the states, the nation, the international loans. We have now produced a nightmare, which we're going to have a major renegotiation, a major battle in sorting all that out. I wrote about it in my book on the destiny of nations. I had five or six things we can do. None of them will resolve the whole issue. There's got to be devaluation and a complete renegotiation of debt. So what am I saying to you? What am I saying to you? I'm saying to you that your generation, I'm in the fourth quarter of my life. I understand that. It's been a wonderful life. And I'm super excited because the kingdom of God and the consciousness around the kingdom of God is growing rapidly. But it means your generations are going to have a major fight over command-based versus choice-based economics. You're going to have a major fight over trying to create absolute wage equality, which is total sin because justice, in fact, let me just handle it now. We're going to get into it again here in a moment in part two. Equality means equality before the law, that everybody is under the law. That's what equality means. Justice means everybody receives their due for what their investments were in any given situation. If I invested $1 million in something and you invested five, there ain't no way you're going to get the same return because I invested time, because money is time in foldable form. Think about that. The more money you have, the more time you have, because you can collect other people's time and use it for yourself. But justice is receiving the proper evaluation of what you invested. And it's unless an investment in what we're doing is exactly the same, you can't have equality and justice. Justice means if God gave me talents, he didn't give you. You can't force me to give my talents or the value of my talents away at a lesser value. As a doctor, that a doctor maybe took 15 years to get his specialty done. He was investing his life, his time. There's no way that that investment of 15 years can be equaled by somebody that spent 6 months. It would be theft. And thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not steal is the commandment that forces us to look at people getting the investment they put into something and the value they put into something. It's a standalone. It's not going to be equated. It's not going to be sorted through because somebody else made a lesser investment unless I choose to give them the excess I got. That's the only way you're going to end up with equality. That's critical that you get that. So we're coming down the home stretch here on part one. I've talked about a lot of things, but primarily I've talked about God grows us up by caring for people and things. Economics is about management of resources and time and gifts. The use of those things tells us something about, are we loving God? And are we distributing what we have in excess? Are we strengthening our neighbor who is less gifted or has less opportunity? That's a part of loving your neighbor as you love yourself. Economics is everywhere. We got a crisis financially, and the level of inflation that we have now is not going away quickly. I don't know what year you're viewing this, but some of the people, God willing, will be viewing this 10 years later. And I'm very curious to see how the renegotiation process and redistribution of debts and defaults of debts and crashes of civil government that made promises to their people they could not economically back up. The chickens are coming home to roost, and your generations have been given really tough choices by some of the policies that my generation and the ones following me have made. And there is a moment of reckoning. And may God give us grace as we go into that period, because it's going to be critical. Well, I'm going to call this to an end and get ready for our next time of sharing. I'm not trying in any way to discourage you, but I want you to know the truth, because you're not going to get the truth from a lot of people, certainly not the politicians, and they'll be doing nothing but playing the blame game. So we're not going to play that game. God bless you. See you in the next teaching.
This is a copyrighted program of Go Strategic, Santa Rosa, California. Unauthorized reproduction is prohibited. Go Strategic is an international nonprofit organization that educates and equips leaders and others for effective service and leadership using biblical principles. For more information, visit us online at www.gostrategic.org.